So hi and welcome to another episode of the Movies You Love podcast, the podcast where I get to sit down and talk with all sorts of interesting people from all across the internet and talk about movies they love, movies that help them fall in love with movies. And I think this is going to be an episode of a lot of firsts, because it's the first movie where it's in the current ethos. It's not something that's from 20 years back. It's not something that my guest saw for the first time when he was 10, and it just kind of grew over time with him. This is something that happened really recently. It's the first movie which kind of brings in one of my favorite things about movies. It's movies that love to be insane and refuses to allow you to apply logic to it in complete senses, and a lot of other things. And I'm so happy that my guest this week, Andrew Johnson from over at Film Geek Radio, who I co-host on a podcast with Navigating the Newsroom, where we discuss the HBO television series The Newsroom as it's ongoing. We did season one last year. We're planning to do season two this year as that comes about, so you can check out for that. And he's also a now regular contributor to The Movie Mezzanine, which is a really cool blog. I've mentioned it before. I had on one of their other writers, Tom Clift, on episode 2, and the talent is there. It's a great site. You guys should go visit it. But I don't think I named it yet. The movie that we're going to be talking about this week is Crank 2 High Voltage. Or is it just Crank High Voltage? Guys, I don't know what I can say about Andrew Johnson other than the obvious. If you go and check out his site, filmgeekradio.com, you'll see the amount of effort he's put into creating this podcasting network from nothing. And I feel like you guys should go over there and check out a couple shows. I know he has shows such as Cinema Fix, The Thin Place, and Let's Get Real, which are all great little podcasts to listen to. But as always, I'll just keep plugging myself. Go listen to Navigating the Newsroom when that comes back in July, when we're going to be doing season 2. But anyways, I'm going to stop right here. Here is the show. I hope you enjoy. Go. Oh, and one more thing before we get into the podcast. I should mention, even though I don't really consider it a massive spoiler, because it's a spoiler for the stinger after the movie, and we kind of spoil the stinger for Fast and the Furious 6, or Furious 6, depending on what you are. So if you haven't seen that movie, if you feel really sensitive about it, it's really in the last few minutes of the episode, so turn off at around minute 48, and you'd have heard most of the episode as it stands, and you won't have been spoiled for Fast and Furious 6. So go into Fast and Furious 6 and come back. Yeah. So, enjoy.
My name is Chev Chelios, and today I didn't die.
It's Stormwind Heart.
Why not just let me die?
They were keeping you alive to farm your organs.
They gave you an artificial heart?
Yeah.
How many bars is this battery charge?
One.
You got 1 hour. Keep your body electrically charged to keep it pumping. If you can get hold of your heart, I'm reasonably sure I can put it back in.
So this week, Andrew, you wanted us to talk about the Neville Dean Taylor amazingness that is Crank 2 High Voltage. This film, I have to say, is the most recent release discussed so far in this podcast. Being only about 4 years old at this point.
Yeah, I wanted to come on the show and talk about a film, and I was trying to figure out what could I discuss, and I noticed, well, let's see, everyone else who has come on the show has talked about these really critically acclaimed films, you know, whether it's Bringing Up Baby or L.A. Confidential or Memento. And I was like, surely there's another film other than that type of movie that I really love that I can talk about. And immediately it was just like, oh, Crank High Voltage. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to try and compare it or make it sound in any way irrelevant in comparison to the other films discussed on this show thus far, because this film, in my mind, is a completely different kind of perfection.
and it's interesting because one of the reasons I want to talk about it is I actually feel like it is, in certain ways, just as noteworthy and just as cinematically important as some of those other films that you've talked about on the program, but it often doesn't get that type of recognition. So I wanted to be sure to come on the show and let you know why I think it's such a great movie and why it deserves to be mentioned alongside films like L.A. Confidential and Memento and films of that ilk.
So I'm going to start off where I start all of my conversations when it comes to these films. And we know this film came out 4 years ago. I'm curious to tell us if you can tell us about your initial reactions and how that first experience played for you with this movie.
The first time I saw Crank High Voltage, it was one of the most enjoyable cinematic experiences I've ever had. I believe I did not go to a press screening. I just went to a regular public screening on opening weekend, and I went with a good friend of mine, Morgan McCormick, and at the time we were going to go see it because we were going to discuss it on the podcast we were co-hosting then called Movie Chatter, and we had both enjoyed the first Crank film, but we really didn't. I think we were expecting Crank High Voltage to be very similar, to be kind of the same, just sort of be a fun little forgettable action movie. And the one thing I remember is just that throughout the film, we just kept looking over at each other with just expressions of disbelief on our face. Like, did that just happen? Is this happening right now? Did they really just do that? And that's what this movie is. It's just scene after scene, the directors Neville Dean and Taylor constantly surprising you and constantly going farther than you think they're willing to go. And so my first viewing was very much just that visceral enjoyment and just that overall surprise of I can't believe what I'm watching right now. It was just a lot of fun, and we were both kind of blown away by the movie. And then I've seen this movie many times since then, and every time I appreciate it more, not only because of how enjoyable it is, but also because I actually think it's very smart in a lot of different ways. And I think there's a lot of different levels on which it's working. Overall, that first viewing was just, it was just really awesome.
I have to say that I can remember watching this movie in the theater with my brother, Douglas, who's a co-host on my podcast, the Unnamed Movie Podcast. And I remember at the time that I don't think he had seen the original Crank yet, but I was very lukewarm on the first Crank film for some reason. Were you the same, or?
I would say I liked the first Crank film, but I did not love it. I thought that it was a fun little action movie that did some interesting things, but ultimately was pretty formulaic and pretty traditional. Like I said, that was sort of what I was expecting from the sequel. But I feel like Crank High Voltage is a very different movie from that first Crank movie. I mean, the original Crank, you can tell they're just sort of gearing up and getting ready for the insanity of Crank High Voltage, because there's really the level of extremes to which they go in Crank High Voltage, there's really nothing even approaching that in the first Crank.
I mean, when I try to think of exactly how I describe this kind of movie, even this movie to people, it always comes down to two words. It is complete and utter cinematic lunacy. And it is just gorgeous in how it does it. But I have just curious, in a month in which we have been given films which generally skimp on plot and go definitely straight to the action, because we're in the midst of another summer blockbuster season, how do you differentiate a film like Crank High Voltage with those movies?
Well, ultimately, I mean, if you're just looking at talking about this summer, honestly, I haven't seen any movies
well,
so far
really
this summer.
Well, not really this summer specifically, but just generally summer movies as they are, you know, stereotypically made to be.
Well, I feel like, first of all, the first Crank, it was pretty low-budget film. And, yeah, it made a decent amount of money at the box office, but it didn't really make a huge impact. And I believe, I'm not even sure the sequel made its money back at the box office. I can't remember. I mean, Crank, it wasn't a big-name property. This was not a tentpole movie. You know, the studio wasn't spending hundreds of millions of dollars to advertise this thing. And as a result, I feel like I feel like this isn't really a quote-unquote summer blockbuster. You know, this is a movie that, yes, it has all the makings of a summer blockbuster in that it's got a lot of action in it, but it's not a big tentpole film. And I think it sort of fell under a lot of people's radar at the time. And I honestly, I don't think it's as nearly as dumb as most summer blockbuster movies. I actually think Crank High Voltage is a very smart and intelligent film. And yeah, when I hear the word summer blockbuster, Crank High Voltage doesn't come to mind at all. I just don't think it's that type of movie.
What is the number one thing which draws you into this movie most times?
The thing about Crank High Voltage is that it is so extreme, and it is so over the top with its violence and its sexuality and its racism and its sexism. There are only two ways to treat it. You can either view it as an awful, offensive, morally reprehensible movie that is perpetuating the worst stereotypes, or you can view it as a satire of that. And that's personally, I view it as a very intelligent, quasi-avant-garde satire of video games and video game values. I mean, when people say things like, oh, there's never been a good video game movie, I immediately respond, well, yes, there has. It was Crank High Voltage. Crank High Voltage is the best video game movie ever made. It's not based on a video game, but it is a video game movie. It follows the same structure as video games, the same logic as video games, and it has the same attitudes towards people that you find in video games, and the directors really like to play with that and subvert that, and I think critique that in an interesting way. So it's definitely not a movie for everyone. It's interesting. My parents actually saw the first Crank and liked it, so I watched Crank High Voltage with my parents. I recommend nobody do that. My parents were horrified by Crank High Voltage.
I really hope you double featured it with Gamer.
They were completely offended. I believe my mom called it pornographic. It's easy to see why some people would have that reaction. It is such an extreme, visceral movie that where the violence and the sexuality is just in your face all the time, and it seems very gratuitous, but I don't think it is. So yeah, that's sort of how I view it. I think you can either walk away. I think it's impossible to walk away from Crank High Voltage indifferent about it. I think you either just completely hate it and everything that's on display, or you end up really, really loving it. But yeah, don't watch it with your parents, people.
Everyone, please go watch it with your parents. I think it's an experience. It's a life experience you must have. Because you will therefore know from that moment forth how to look at them squarely in the eye and say, yeah, that happened.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised that my somewhat conservative parents had watched the first Crank and enjoyed it. And I thought, well, if they can handle the first Crank, I guess they can handle the second. But I mean, you know what?
What's body Tourette's between family members?
I mean, the level of racism and misogyny on display in Crank High Voltage is leaps and bounds above what was on display in the first Crank. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. Even if you like the first Crank film, the second one is just, it's a completely different animal.
So you kind of mentioned misogyny in relation to this film.
Yes.
And I found it really interesting revisiting this movie, kind of paying closer attention to the character played by Amy Smart, the girlfriend, who, after all of the shit she went through in the first film, we find her at a strip club.
Right. yeah, I mean, pretty much, if you're a woman in the Crank movies, you are a sex object. That is what you are. You exist for Chev Chelios to either ogle you or have sex with you. And that's really it. With a few...
Then what is Bai Ling?
Bai Ling is just a whole other thing, okay? She is an example both of how the film does sexualize her to a certain extent, but also she's not white. And as a minority, the movie also makes fun of her and how she doesn't speak English very well. I mean, it even comes up with subtitles, even when she's speaking English. Like, it's really, it's not only objectifying her as a woman, it's making fun of the fact that she's a foreigner. And you can, it's incredibly offensive, honestly, when you stop to think about it, but it's also hilarious, and I think there's a point behind it. You know, and let's not forget, the end of Crank High Voltage, doesn't it end with Chev Chelios making out with Bai Ling? Because he thinks that
whilst in a dream, thinking that he's with Amy Smart.
Yes, he's on fire and starts making out with Bai Ling. So she, we can assume, is dead now. Okay, that she was.
No one ever dies in this movie, Andrew. No one, unless you literally see them decapitated. And at this point, that's really not a rule of thumb with this show.
Here's the thing about misogyny in Crank High Voltage. Crank High Voltage, at its core, is a movie about masculinity, specifically video game masculinity, and the type of masculinity you see on display in games like Grand Theft Auto, for example, where it's all about, I gotta be the toughest, I gotta kill as many people as possible, I can meet some women and have sex with them, and that's really all they are most of the time. And so the camera is, I mean, in Crank High Voltage, the camera, it's one of the most voyeuristic cameras, you'll ever see, I think, in a movie. The camera is just constantly sliding up and down women's bodies, constantly just zooming in on butts and breasts, and it's incredibly objectifying and voyeuristic. The immediate comparison that springs to mind, honestly, is Spring Breakers, which I saw a few months ago. That's another situation in which the camera is just constantly about just getting just constantly ogling women's bodies and objectifying them, and to such an extent that it feels very sleazy at times. And again, it's just that idea of taking these attitudes and these values that you find in video games and just blowing them up to 11, and just basically hitting the viewer over the head with them to the point where it's kind of stops being erotic and kind of feels dirty a lot of the time. Like Crank High Voltage, I don't know how you feel when you watch it, but there are times when I just feel dirty. Like I feel like
I don't know what you're talking about, Andrew, because when I see a stripper's breasts which have been shot oozing out their plastique or whatever, their silicone. I'm perfectly turned on by that, and I'm happy with that.
Well, see, that's a great example of the sort of satirical point that I think Neville Dean and Taylor are trying to make here. They are trying to have their cake and eat it too. They are trying to present this violence and this sex in a way that thrills the viewer, but they're also pushing it to such an extreme that it kind of catches you off guard and is a little bit disturbing. Like you mentioned in the strip club, when suddenly their boobs just explode, basically, and are oozing silicone. It's kind of shocking, and you just sort of sit there with your mouth agape, just kind of like, wait, did they really just do that? It does make you kind of uncomfortable, and it is kind of disgusting. So I just find it fascinating the way that they treat women in this movie and the way that they treat men. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that one of the main ways in which violence is inflicted in Crank High Voltage, it's sexually. It's to genitalia, for example. There are scenes of Chev Chelios having his testicles electroshocked. Or there's a scene where he rapes a guy with a shotgun. You know, there's another scene where the villain of the film, the ferret, makes a guy slice off his own nipple. You know, this isn't just your normal everyday violence. This is violence where the point is not just to harm the other person, it's to emasculate the other person. It's all about who's the toughest guy, who's the biggest man, how can I prove that I'm more of a man than you are? The worst thing I can do to you is to feminize you or to emasculate you in some way.
Talking about violence in that manner kind of brings me back to something that I heard Tarantino talk about when everyone critiques him and violence, right? He said one of two things when it comes to violence in his films. Number one, I remember him talking about it during Django Unchained, where people were all going like, oh my goodness, we're seeing all of this horrific violence. And he's saying, yeah, it's violence, but it's not real violence, it's movie violence, which is the equivalent of calling it cartoon violence, where it's so over the top and so ridiculous, and yes, it is violence, but no one in a sensible thought would ever think of this as reality and enjoy it in the sadistic way that people think people are enjoying it. Or number two, he literally just come out and say, but it's just so much fun, right?
Right.
Which you seem to be in the camp of with this film at least, that this is cartoon violence. This is violence that is so ridiculous and over the top that while it is bloody and disgusting on a surface level, it really, no one in their sensible mind can take it in a sadistic, enjoyable manner.
I don't think that's the case. I actually think that part of the reason the movie is so much quote-unquote fun is it does play to just that, those masculine fantasies of being the toughest, of having all the women, of being able to humiliate and objectify everyone else around you. I mean, this movie is just the masculine id unleashed, essentially. And getting back to that question of real-life violence versus movie violence and how the screen relates to reality, I mean, I will agree with everyone who says violence in movies, there's not a direct correlation between violence in movies, between violence in real life, okay? Someone's not going to watch Crank High Voltage and then go anally rape someone with a shotgun. That's just not going to happen. But I do think that film and video games and media and the images that we see on screen and the messages that we take from them, I do think that they can, in a more general sense, shape attitudes, shape beliefs, shape culture. And I think that that is what Neville Dean and Taylor believe as well. I mean, if you look at their first three films, Crank, Crank High Voltage, and Gamer, they are these three movies that are very much about, about playing with these video game structures and also video game values, and exploring how they might influence real life. I mean, Gamer is explicitly about someone who's playing a video game, and it turns out he's actually playing a real person, you know. So I think that I think Neville Dean and Taylor are very aware that if you see sexism or racism on screen, it's not quite just as simple of, oh, well, it's just a movie. I think they understand that it's symptomatic of real life prejudice and that it can both reflect and reinforce those values. And I think they're trying to play with that and they're trying to explore that in movies like Crank High Voltage. You know, yes, they are letting the viewer objectify women, laugh as Chev Chelios is incredibly racist, you know, be thrilled when he anally rapes someone with a shotgun.
I adore that scene.
It is really an incredible scene. Also because it's shot like a first-person shooter video game, when he's sort of, you know, just going around those the crates and stuff, and it's from the first-person perspective.
Then you just see him like, oh, that gun ran out, throws it down, and then he finds another one in 2 seconds.
Yes. It's really a well-done scene. And I feel like, I honestly feel like things in Crank High Voltage are so extreme. Like I said, if you're taking it seriously, and if you actually think that Neville Dean and Taylor really think this way or want you to root for Chev Chelios and see him as a hero, then I think it's an incredibly offensive movie because Chev Chelios is honestly an horrible, awful individual. And I think they want to take these values that we're used to consuming and we're used to being thrilled by and we're used to enjoying, and they want to crank it up to such an extent that at times, yeah, you feel sleazy. At times, you feel kind of disgusted. One of the last shots of the movie is Chev Chelios breaking the fourth wall and flipping off the audience as if he's saying, F you for watching this movie and for being and for enjoying this. Screw you. This is horrible. You know? So I really do think that they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. They're trying to allow the viewer to enjoy these horrible things on screen, but also critique it at the same time. And for most of the film, I think they succeed to a large extent. But yeah, that's one of the main reasons I love it. I just think it works really well as a satire of that video game, you know, white male misogyny and racism and that type of prejudice that you often see lurking under the surface of a lot of these video games.
So, I was kind of alluding to this idea, but with one of the things that you mentioned, and it has to do with the misogyny. There's a section in the second half of the film post horse penis. Because that is definitely my marker for the halfway mark of this movie. It's that I got to see a horse penis. We see Amy Smart basically on her own and trying to figure out how she's going to live in this world. It's almost like an idea of what she was during the 3 months that Chelios was out, right? Where she is defending herself. She is defending Chelios, because we see her in the police station mm-hmm. where she's under heated interrogation, and all she says to the man is, "I bet you can't drop out of a helicopter and live."
Right.
I understand seeing this movie as sexist, misogynist. I know that's a repetition, but I don't care. It's that much that it deserves being said five more times.
Right.
Racist and all of these things. But at the same time, it has redeeming moments, at least for its main characters, of all of these negatives. For example, I'm talking about Amy Smart with the second half of the film. You have Bai Ling when she comes in with all of her crew at the finale, including I can't remember his name. Body Terrace is all I'm going to call him right now.
Venus, yeah.
Venus. And even whilst he's having body Tourette's, he ends up being a hero, quote-unquote heroic moment at the end of the film.
Yeah.
So
it's really interesting because throughout the entire movie, you know, you've got these racist and homophobic slurs being thrown around. And then at the end, the minorities and the homosexuals, they all come together with their respective gangs to help Chev Chelios take out the bad guy. So it is a very interesting movie, like I said, in which the main character is a total asshole when you get right down to it. And yet at the end of the day, everyone around him is sort of empowered. It's getting to this. I think what it's touching on is this sort of individualistic male fantasy where, you know, every guy wants to believe, I'm the best, I'm the toughest, you know, all the women want to be with me, and yet I'm not an asshole. That's what every guy wants to think. And that scene you mentioned with Amy Smart, I think, is a really fascinating scene because the police officer that's interrogating her basically calls her out as a character and says, "You've been horribly degraded for two movies now. why are you still with Chev Chelios?" And she basically says, "It's because Chev Chelios is Superman. It's because he survived falling from a helicopter. It's because he's like no other man." And I feel like that is how most guys, it's how we want to see ourselves. We want to be the toughest. We want to be the guy that all the women want to be with. We want to be indestructible. We want to be the type of person that can humiliate and degrade others, but justifiably so because we're the best, if that makes sense. Like, it's okay if we do it because we're on top.
That's what I tell myself every day.
Yeah. I feel like to a certain extent, that's what Chef Chelios is. He's that fantasy, that male fantasy of an invincible guy who can have any woman he wants, and it doesn't matter how he treats them, they will always want him because he's number one. He's the number one guy on the planet. And it's just a really fascinating film. The other scene, I don't know what you think of this scene, Andrew. Let me ask, what did you think of the two or three times that it flashbacks to Chev Chelios as a child on a talk show, in which it's sort of like this Maury style talk show where he has to talk about how he's a horrible child and he's a delinquent, basically.
As far as I'm concerned, Chev Chelios was never a horrible child, or at least as far as Chev Chelios was concerned, he was never a horrible child. And I was actually just about to go there, because that is another great scene in this movie. Because, I mean, it's one thing for a character in age, well, I'm going to say 40 for Statham, but for the character of Chev Chelios, let's call him 30. At age 30, to be a notorious gangster who's just killed an entire gang, but fallen from a helicopter, survived, and is able to run around with a fake heart and continue to be racist, violent, and generally badass king. But it's another thing for I'm going to guess, 8-year-old child to do the same. Because that's all we see him doing throughout that. You even see him being horrendously sexist to his mother on the show.
Right.
And I still find myself laughing and enjoying the moment.
Yeah, it's completely over the top and hilarious to see a child engaging in all these things just because it's so shocking. And yet, it's a key scene that makes me think, okay, Neville Dean and Taylor, they know what they're doing here. They know that Chev Chelios is a horrible person. They know that to a certain extent, the attitudes and the values and the impulses that they're trying to provoke in their audience, that they're horrible. And yet, so they include this scene where they're like, okay, well, let's take a step back here. Yes, this is supposed to just be a video game. Yes, it's just a movie, but let's take a step back and ask ourselves, okay, if Chev Chelios was a real person, what would his childhood have been like? And basically what their conclusion is in these scenes, one, he had an absent father and he plays video games all the time. So we're left to conclude that all of his attitudes about masculinity and what it means to be a man and what it means to be an adult, they all come from video games. So it's really a scathing critique of people that buy into the values, I think, of video games like Grand Theft Auto, for example, and games where you're just encouraged to be a thug, be violent, be sexist. It's in many ways a scathing critique of games like that, because it's essentially saying, look, if people – it's acknowledging, look, if people do not have guidance in their lives as children, for example, if they don't have someone helping them figure out what it means to be a good person, where are they going to get their values and their worldview? They're going to get it from movies. They're going to get it from video games. So Chev Chelios is the ultimate video game poster boy. He's a child who was raised on video games, and now as an adult, he's an awful person. You know? So it just seems to me that Neville Dean and Taylor, they're just having a lot of fun acknowledging, yeah, video games are fun, movies are fun, they're enjoyable, they're thrilling, they allow us to engage in quote-unquote forbidden desires, but let's not sit back and think that they aren't culturally influential, you know, and that they cannot impact people. Does that make sense at all?
Oh, totally. But then again, you're trying to talk about the impact of movies and the cultural reference, and then we have to get through a sequence in which we basically have a Jason Statham versus Art Su, who I will forever know as KCDC. I hope you know where that's from.
yes.
In a Godzilla scene.
Yes, and which, it, again, brilliant scene, not only because it's a lot of fun and completely unsurprising, but because if you want to overanalyze it, like I tend to do, you know, it's a situation in which Chev Chelios is literally a giant, deformed, cartoonish version of himself. It's basically the filmmakers acknowledging Chev Chelios and this movie. It is about it's taking our values and our ideas about men and women and just blowing them completely out of proportion, so they're cartoons. And it's a really fun sequence where Chev Chelios is literally just this giant cardboard. I don't even know what it's made of. Is it cardboard or something?
I remember reading about it when the film was being made, and as far as I know, there's a sort of animatronic head that they made, and they just put it onto a real person to kind of make it look a little bloated, and they were just standing on a tiny set.
Okay.
Which, when you even saw it, it was kind of crazy, because they zoom in on, like, these two regular people who are not Godzillas.
Right.
And you can see that they are like clay models, but they're not even good clay models. They're purposely bad clay models. It's like someone told their 5-year-old child, go and make me a little guy. And they put on, you know, just a tad little pink area for lips and a hat, and they're like, good.
Yeah, it's a really fun scene, especially if you've seen a lot of old Godzilla movies. And I love how the scene ends, because it's the scene that ends with Chev Chelios finally getting his hands on the red cooler that he's been chasing for most of the movie. And then I love how they don't let us see what's inside the cooler. And it's just a brilliant moment, because all we know is that it's something horrible. It's something so awful that even Chev Chelios is disgusted. And I think that's the point. I think that's the point of not showing us what it is. Because whatever it is, it's so horrible that even Chev Chelios can't really handle it. And it's sort of like, well, if Chev Chelios is in many ways the most horrible thing out there, nothing they reveal could live up to that, you know? So it's basically just letting the audience's imagination run wild and just requiring them to unleash their darkest fantasies about what could be in that cooler, and confront you with that. Like, if they weren't after everything the filmmakers have shown us, what could be so bad that they're not going to show it to us now?
I guess the last thing, at least one of the things that we haven't yet talked about in this film, is the character of Poondong, played by David Carradine.
Yeah.
The man who actually wants Chev Chelios' heart. Who, when we meet, is just this crazy old Chinese dude who is just parading down the street looking for prostitutes.
Yes. It's incredibly offensive, and yet that's also why it's sort of hilarious, because it is so stereotypical, the old pervert. I mean, the fact that it's David Carradine playing an old Asian guy aside, that's another issue in itself, but just the fact that it's just this old dude looking to score with a big black prostitute. Very over the top, very sleazy. And the kind of thing that you probably could see in a video game. It probably wouldn't be that out of the ordinary, honestly.
I mean, it definitely is the kind of thing you'd see in a video game. And the weirdest part about it is that we talk about all of these things as being over-stylized and over-theorized and all just general ridiculousness, which is why the sexism and the racism we can laugh at, because we can see where not even the filmmakers know this is seriously funny. But at the same time, if you were to be playing those games that we've continually referenced, like Grand Theft Auto, these would be characters who the game itself would try and make you take seriously while they're actually doing this exact same thing.
Exactly, yes. That's what makes, I think, Crank High Voltage so brilliant, is that normally, if you're playing video games like this, you'll take the violence, you'll accept maybe the casual racism or sexism. That just sort of comes with the territory, and you don't even think about it. And this movie, they just sort of shove it in your face, like, no, you can't get away from it this time. Here's what it is. Yeah, you can laugh at it. It is ridiculous, but we're not going to let you ignore it. That's what I really like about the film, is that, yes, it gives you the same thrill, that same voyeuristic exploitative thrill of watching these things happen, but it also is critiquing it and just shoving it in your face to such an extent that you can't just passively let it go by.
So, one thing that I've kind of thought about while we're talking about this is the question of the actual effect that Neville Dean and Taylor have had on the world of cinema. Because even before they actually got to make their own movie, Crank, they apparently, as far as I understand, were very famous second unit directors for people like Michael Bay and a lot of the action well-known directors of today. But I've been reading a lot about that people have been talking about recent about this idea of the vulgar auteurists, who are people who reside solely on the visual surface as opposed to just only within the core ideals, which is what the general auteur idea has been about. But when I think about it, and I think about the style of Neville Dean and Taylor, which is this frenetic motion that's always going throughout film, it feels like something that would have caught on really quickly within the world of cinema, but I can only think of their style being in their films. Is it just me? Am I wrong in how I'm viewing the effect of the Neville Dean Taylor style of filmmaking?
You're not. They have a very distinct style, and I'm actually Neville Dean Taylor. I'm a Neville Dean Taylor fan, even though I agree their movies aren't always great. Like, Gamer was okay. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance was pretty horrible. But even so, I think they're incredibly innovative and exciting filmmakers. And I can't wait to see what they do next, because not only are they really all about exploring that relationship between video games and media and real life and culture, Crank High Voltage makes it obvious, they're willing to sort of push every boundary. They're willing to push people's buttons, to go farther than you would normally see. And be sort of daring. And sometimes that's going to work, and sometimes that's not going to work. And there is just this raw lunacy. I like the way you described it at the beginning, this cinematic lunacy to their style that is, you can see in all of their movies. I mean, even Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, awful movie, but personally, I much prefer it to the first Ghost Rider film because there are some of those Neville Dean Taylor touches in that film. There are just these really kind of goofy, really insane, ludicrous scenes in that film. And I mean, these are two guys that you give them a big budget movie, you give them a small budget movie, they're going to find a way to do something interesting with it. I mean, with the Crank films, they were holding the camera themselves. They were their own cameramen a lot of the time, and one of them would get wide shots and the other one would be on like roller skates with the camera trying to get the coolest looking shot possible. And that's, to a large extent, I think that's why their movies have so much energy to them. Because they're willing to think outside the box and try to take some risks. I mean, if you were to ask me, like, who's the modern-day version of Robert Rodriguez, you know, back when he was first starting out, I would probably point to Neville Dean Taylor, just because they seem to me similar in the sense that even if it's just very little money they're working with, they'll be creative and they'll find ways to work with it.
They definitely seem like the bootstrapping filmmakers that they make themselves out to be.
Yes, and after, you know, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance was critically derided and after it sort of failed at the box office, I'm not sure when we'll see a film from them again, but honestly, I really hope that they return to the Crank series with a low budget.
I am banking on there being a Crank 3 in which Chev Chelios has to keep himself wet for the entire movie, and this then ties into how he has to have sex again with Amy Smart in the middle of the street.
Well, I mean, they have said multiple times that they want to keep returning to the Crank series whenever they can, and they've even joked that, okay, maybe it'll be Crank 3D will be the next one, which personally I think would be amazing. I don't even want to think about the kinds of things that will be popping out at the audience if they make Crank 3D, but you're right. Not only, I mean, it just, when you're making a film in the style of a video game, it's just natural that there's going to be an unlimited amount of sequels because, like a video game, your character has to have an unlimited amount of lives, you know? I mean, these are movies in which, like a video game, the hero constantly has to go get a power-up, and then at the end of each movie, he supposedly dies, and then turns out, no, he has an extra life. So, of course, there needs to be a Crank 3D. There should be 10 Crank movies, honestly. And I hope that they keep making them, and I hope that they keep trying to push boundaries and explore, who is this Chev Chelios guy? Is he really a hero? Like, should we really be rooting for him? Or is he just that teenager that we see in the flashbacks in a bigger body? Is he just this really immature person? Who happens to be incredibly violent and sexist? Is he just a giant child, in a sense, who hasn't learned restraint?
How many iterations of Crank do you think they would go through before they finally use the subtitle "Fuck you, Chelios"?
that would be the unofficial title, I think. That would never get released in theaters. Maybe they could probably get away with, you know, just F you or screw you or an F with like the three asterisks after it.
Look, as long as I can read it, fuck you, Chelios, I'm happy.
Yeah, I hope they keep. I hope they make a million more Crank movies. Honestly, to be perfectly honest, have you seen Fast and Furious 6?
Furious 6, yes, I have.
Okay, slight spoiler for Fast and Furious 6 coming up, but I gotta tell you, as thrilling as that post-credit scene was in Furious 6, there was a part of me that was like, oh man, this means now Jason Statham's not gonna have as much time to go make Crank 3. Oh!
He could be Chev Chelios in Fast 7. Wouldn't that be amazing? This is before he's drugged and made to go on his on his crank voyages, and this is when he's actually a hired gun.
Man,
there we go. I've gifted Vin Diesel some writing thoughts.
If Neville Dean and Taylor were directing Fast and Furious 7, I mean, that would just be the craziest thing I can imagine, I think. But yeah, I hope there's at least two or three more Crank movies, and I hope each one is just as extreme as Crank High Voltage, and I just hope they keep pushing those boundaries.
Anyways, I'd like to thank you so much for coming and talking with me, Andrew.
No problem. I hope you didn't mind talking with me about Crank High Voltage. I'm telling you, forget LA Confidential and Memento. Crank High Voltage is just as important, just as noteworthy.
So, that was the show. I really hope you enjoyed it. Andrew Johnson really knows how to dissect culture in a way that some people might not even think to, because when you talk about a movie like Crank High Voltage, you say to yourself, this movie is stupid and fun, and I don't want to think any more than that. But he's right about so many things. If you like this, you should probably just subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, or you can just get it through my website, gmanreviews.com. The show is every 2 weeks. I hope you enjoy. Go give us a rating or a review on iTunes. That would be really great. And as always, keep enjoying the movies. In my heart goes by you.